welcome you, and you can follow along. We're in the book of Genesis, and we're starting at Genesis chapter 14 this morning with a discussion about Melchizedek, and then we're going to try to get through most of chapters 15 through 17. So pretty much what we're going to try to get through today discusses Abraham meeting Melchizedek. It's the end of chapter 14. And then we're going to talk about God's covenant with Abram. Then we have a chapter discussing Hagar and Ishmael. And then we'll have a discussion about the sign of the covenant between God and Abram's descendants. So that's the material we'll try to cover this morning. Quickly going through what we covered last week, you had the story about Abram fearing that he was going to possibly be killed by entering into a foreign land because of his wife's beauty. So he asked her to deceive the Egyptians by saying, "You're my sister, that I may live." We know in a future incident it's going to happen again. We'll get to this, I think, probably a week from today. Very almost identical story, just a different king in a different area, but kind of similar things happen. A little more details given that wasn't given here, but we'll get to that later. But in that later story, we know about, you know, that there is some truth behind what he said, even though it's a deception. He explains in Genesis chapter 20 that she is truly my sister. She's the daughter of my father, not the daughter of my mother. But, you know, the important thing for us to remember is she became his wife. So the relationship had changed. This is his wife now, no longer his sister, even though that was true at one time. Sarah's taken to Pharaoh. This is discussed in this story where she's taken because of this deceptive story. They see her and think, you know, not that they couldn't have taken her by force anyway, but being that it's not his wife, she's available, she's beautiful, they take her. He's given a lot of riches for that, a lot of animals and other things. It says he's treated well. But because of this, the Lord plagues Pharaoh and his house with great plagues, it says. And we brought up the point of recalling in chapter 12 where all of these were land, nation, and seed promise were given. There were also promises given specifically to Abram. And one of those was that in dealings with other men, the people that deal well with Abram are going to be blessed, and those people that deal evil with him are going to be cursed. So you see right here, even though there was deception involved in this story, God had told him, and God had a plan for Abram, and that if people dealt harshly with you or dealt bad with you, then God was going to deal bad with them. And so that's kind of what happens in this story. And so God is in control and is able to get Sarah back for Abram at this time. But when Pharaoh learns about all that, what happened right here, he's very troubled by this. He's kind of like, you know, what did I do wrong? I took somebody that was available, that I thought was available. And so he says, "What have you done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister?" You know, in other words, why didn't you tell me the truth? Why did you deceive me in this way? And now my whole land's being plagued because of this. So he says, "Take her and go your way." And they're sent away with all the possessions. So really the point we probably ought to get out of this story more than anything else is that God is in control. This happens several times. It's going to happen in what we discuss a little bit later, where Sarai tries to plan and do something a certain way, but it wasn't God's plan. God's in control. In this story, Pharaoh's not in control. There's nothing he could have done, really, to Abram at this time because God had plans for him. Abram was one of the safest individuals, if not the safest individual on the earth, but being human, he still feared for his life. So their possessions and their lives are preserved by God. You know, we already discussed that he made multiple mistakes there, so I'll move on from that. Okay, then we got to the story last week where Abram and Lot, their herds and their peoples had gotten so big that they could no longer dwell in the same area. You know, they had numerous servants, herds, flocks, and strife had started between the herdsmen of Lot and Abram. And there was also a lot of other peoples kind of that land, so they were kind of, to dwell in the same place wasn't working out. So Abram says, I don't want there to be strife here between your people and my people, or your herdsmen and my herdsmen. So he tells Lot, separate from me. If you take the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll take the left. And highlighted here is because we are brethren. And that, you know, I kind of highlighted that because that's something that we ought to get out of this story. We shouldn't have strife with one another. We need to try to work it out. We need to rise above whatever's going on and do like Abram did in this point right here, which was let the other person choose and keep the peace. Then we get into Lot's poor choice. It says there in 13 verses 10 that he lifted his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And so his eyes kind of say, this is the spot for me. Kind of with no further investigation, he looks like, I'm going to take the kind of the best well watered area and I'm going that way. And so they separate from each other. So Lot chose the land without considering the character of the inhabitants or what advantages or disadvantages it might provide him in spiritual things. And as we will get to this week, this choice, this particular choice that he made here without further investigation is going to have severe consequences on Lot and his family. Okay, then we got a little bit further and God repeats the promises to Abram. There he says, for the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever. God tells Abram, I give it to you, down in verse 17 of that chapter. He also says down in verse 16 of that chapter, I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants could be numbered. So there's this promise being repeated about a great nation. And it talks about Abram moving to Mamre around Hebron. And we talked about how much it keeps bringing up that Abram is a man that has a very, very close relationship with God. He is constantly seeking to build altars and worship him. It is something that is a lesson for us that wherever he's moving around or wherever he's going, in almost every case, it describes him in that manner. Then we got into this city-state kings war. You had these... You had these four kings from the Mesopotamian region that were kind of oppressing some of these kings around the Salt Sea. It says there was four kings against five down there in chapter 14, verse 9. But this kind of the main invader, this Chedorlaomer, it says that after this time when the kings around the Dead Sea or the Salt Sea had started rebelling against him, he comes in and he starts invading all these other cities and he's just kind of beating them all down. And then these five kings listed there on the screen, they kind of get together and they join the battle around what's called the Valley of Siddim or the Salt Sea. And the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah end up, it's not going well. They're being defeated and they flee. And it describes a lot of asphalt pits and stuff around there. It says many fell in that area. Well, they flee. And the gist of what happens is these four Mesopotamian kings win the battle. They plunder Sodom and Gomorrah and they leave. But before they leave, they take Lot captive. So that leads to the next part of that story. So they took him away. Someone escaped from the battle. They go to Mamre and tell Abram what had happened. And Abram takes 318. He had trained all these men out of his servants to be warriors. And they go to rescue Lot. So it's kind of another part of Abram that we learn about is how strong and how brave that he is. And this is a family member that he loves. And doesn't matter how far they took him. Doesn't matter what the situation is. He's going to get him. So it says that he travels north to Dan. Talked about them attacking by night. He goes and he gets him back and makes sure his family is protected. I mean, you see just by the map there. I mean, he over what that land of Canaan region, south to north, he goes all the way through there and chases him. It says north to Damascus. So That was last week. So now we left off and didn't introduce after this battle happens, after Lot's returned, and after Abram gets back from that battle, he's coming back down through there, and it says, this is, you can follow along now on the screen or with your Bibles, Genesis 14, starting with verse 18. It says, then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High, and he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And then talking about Abram there, it goes on and says, and he gave him a tithe of all. Verse 21, now the king of Sodom, not the king of Salem, now the king of Sodom said to Abram, give me the persons and take the goods for yourselves, for yourself. But Abram said to the king of Sodom, I've raised my hand to the Lord, God Most High, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will take nothing from a thread to a sandal strap, and that I will take, and that I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, I made Abram rich. And then finishes up by saying, except only what the young men have eaten, those that were with him, and the portion of the men who went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. But he's saying, I'm not being made rich. And I think part of this is also being related to just how much evil was going on with those. He didn't want anything to be said that he took anything from this evil king. And the point that was given there also, he didn't want any body to say that he had taken, or gotten rich from this king of Sodom. So let's just go over a few of the points that were brought out in those few verses. Melchizedek is a title meaning king of righteousness. He's also king of Salem. Salem, later at least most, believe that this is later what it would be called Jerusalem. Salem means peace, so he was the king of righteousness and also the king of peace. He was a priest, but not by lineage. We get to that story later about having priests through lineage, but his was by appointment from God. There's a lot said in Hebrews about this relationship that we're not going to get into a whole lot today, but we'll just bring up a few points here. He is a man, but much about him is a mystery. It says that he had no mother, no father, no genealogy, no beginning of days or end of life. So very mysterious kind of description, at least what's brought about in the New Testament about him. Abraham honored Melchizedek's priesthood by giving him a tithe of all. And, you know, well, it's something we haven't really heard about before, but this tithing will be a requirement later. And this seems to be the first mention of a tithe in the Bible that's talked about. But Melchizedek, he blessed Abram. It's describes in Hebrews 7 that he's better than Abram because the lesser is blessed by the better. And more than anything, all that's kind of related to how Christ is related to this character as brought up in the book of Hebrews. He's used by the Hebrew writer to describe Christ, our king and priest forever. And again, on your own time, and I know we've, you know, most in here, maybe all in here, have studied that several times about Christ being after the order of Melchizedek. Any comments or questions about Melchizedek or that relationship before we move on this morning? Okay, so this is kind of strange, but since that was part of the last lesson, I have a quick chart just, you know, so we don't lose it. What are some of the things, you know, we said kind of one of the things out here that we're trying to use or for us to think about today is faith and failings of family relationships as described in this book. And so some of the things I thought about having to deal with faith here was Abram keeping the peace with Lot, us learning that lesson from him about this is our brethren and we don't want strife with our brethren. So that was one thing. That constant example of him being one who worships God and has a close relationship with God, seeks God's counsel, listens to what God tells him to do. His rescue of his family members, showing his bravery. He's not afraid of evil kings and their forces or anything right there. That was another very positive thing. And him honoring God's priest was another thing that we just talked about. As far as failings that I was thinking about when I was producing this, was the deception of Pharaoh that we talked about, That wasn't one of his brighter days. You know, he kind of lost sight of that God made him these promises and God was going to take care of him. But again, not trying to overly berate him. We make a lot of mistakes because we're human right there. But really his focus on that day where he was fearing for his life should have been like, God has my back. Then also, another failing, him asking Sarah to deceive, that same story. And then Lot's poor choice that we were just reviewing right there, where he let his eyes pick the choice instead of, is this going to be best for me and my family? And what we will see again as we review, you know, it's a very famous story and something we've studied several times. But as we get into the next week, just an absolute epic failure that he ended up in the area that he ended up in. Okay, so let's get into what we're supposed to get started to today, which is God's covenant with Abram, story of Hagar and Ishmael, and then the sign of the covenant. So let's start with Genesis chapter 15, first few verses. Let's read those. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" Then Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir." Again, Abram is looking to the way he sees things, and God will straighten him out on this shortly. So in that right there, something we can get out of there is God's relationship with him. He's a protector, and you saw that in several ways already. In Egypt, God protected him where he was fearing for his life. God protected him there. And then chasing armies down, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles away and recovering his relative Lot, God is his protector and the giver of blessings for him. Now, Abraham has concern here. I think if something's disrespectful, it's usually brought out and it will be later. I think here is really just Abram is concerned that he's getting older and he's been given these promises and he's just not getting the big picture. He doesn't understand it. And we may feel this way too. You'd just be like, "I don't understand how this is going to happen. I'm getting old. And the only one that would be an heir in my house right now is not a descendant of mine." So he describes that and just, you know, he's thinking, how are these promises going to be fulfilled? So the story continues in verse 4. "And behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, 'This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you're able to number them.' And he said to him, 'So shall your descendants be.'" You know, we just read a little while ago about God describing it as the dust of the earth. Now he's telling him to look at the star. He's giving another kind of physical examples. Look how many and how vast. This is how great your descendants will be. So God tells him an heir is coming, and it's not going to be Eleazar. It's going to be one from your own body. And he asks him, you know, "Can you count the stars?" Again, look at how much. You know, have you ever went out there and looked, and when it's just pitch black at night and no clouds or anything in the sky, and it's just the sky filled of stars as far as what you can see, and many more than you can see, but they're just everywhere and just beautiful. And he's saying, "Go look at this. That's what you need to be thinking of. I'm going to take care of you." So again, these descendants, you're going to have a great nation coming from you. It's not going to descend from somebody from Damascus. It's going to come from your body. So again, as we discussed in a previous story, God is in control and he's letting Abram know, I've got this. You know, continue to trust in me. Then down in verse 6, it said, "And he believed in the Lord." So that's something about Abram that we see over and over. But here we go again. He believed in the Lord, and God accounted it to him for righteousness. That's repeated in several places in the New Testament. I have two of them down there, Romans 4:3 and Galatians 3:6, when Paul is describing this right here. And then I'm going to read a few verses from Romans 4 where Paul kind of elaborates about this that happened between God and Abram. But he believed. What did he believe? That his descendants would be as many as the stars in the sky, yet he had no son yet. So God told them this again. He puts faith in God again. He doesn't doubt. And then Paul tells us a little bit more about this. So let's just read this excerpt from Romans chapter 4. It says down in verse 18 there, "Who contrary to hope, in hope believed, so that he became the father of many nations, according to what was spoken, so shall your descendants be. And not being weak in faith, he did not consider his own body already dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb, she was barren. He did not waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully convinced that what he had promised, he was also able to perform. And therefore, it was accounted to him for righteousness." So let's focus on that phrase there that Paul gives. He was fully convinced. When God tells him to go look at and count the stars and look at them and so shall your descendants be, he doesn't start arguing with them. He was fully convinced. Okay, do we have any comments through those first six verses so far? Any comments? Okay, so continuing, verse 7, God says, "I brought you out of Ur," he reminds them of that, "to give you this land." Verse 7, Abraham asked God for confirmation. "How shall I know that I will inherit it?" he says in verse 8. Then God directs sacrifices. So this is discussed in verses 9 and 10. He tells them to take these different animals, a 3-year-old heifer, cut it in half, places them opposite each other. He does the same with a 3-year-old female goat and a 3-year-old ram, cuts them in half, takes the halves, facing each other. And he takes a turtle dove and a young pigeon as well, as directed. God directs this. Abram obeys, and he does so and places them and prepares those as described there through verse 10. After those sacrifices were placed, it says the sun was setting and a deep sleep comes over him. And it says horror and fear falls over him. So, you know, or where it describes it as horror right here, it seems like, you know, if you ever have one of these things, I kind of see like a word like unsettled because of maybe what he's hearing or whatever. It's just a little bit of troubling. You know, it's not necessarily all pleasant good news that he's hearing. So, you know, maybe something that in this deep sleep that would cause some tossing and turning or that. But it was troubling to him, describes it even as horror fell over him in verse 12. But in this time, God foretells the future of what's going to happen. You know, all-knowing God's telling him, here's what's going to happen in the next period of time. He said, you know, your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs. I put Egypt there, but he didn't say Egypt at that point. We just know the story, so that's why I put it in parentheses. But verse 13, your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs. They'll be servants for about 400 years. We're told later in Exodus that's about 430 years. But, you know, God's telling them about 400 years, your people are going to be in this land that's not theirs. They're not going to be in the land of Canaan at that time. That's probably, see, this sort of stuff is why some of this is causing him to be unsettled. Then God tells him, as recorded in verse 14, that God will judge those people or that nation. And a very positive thing there, that the descendants will come out with great possessions. And we already read about a week ago that they're going to come out a great nation from there too. So there's positive in there, but it's not going to happen right now. It's going to happen in God's time. And he's just kind of telling them these events are going to take place first. He's letting them know these things are going to happen. And then he also says, you'll be buried at a good old age. Down in verse 15, then he says, again, after about 4 generations, your descendants will return here. Where? To this land. This land we've been talking over and over. Seems like the 4 generations are kind of talking about, you know, periods of time of about 100 years being what's already described by God in the previous verses and what we know later, too, that that's what's being talked about. But the deal is, it's going to be in God's time, and it wasn't in God's time for this to happen today. Like, this isn't happening next week or whatever, so he tells them, here's kind of how it's going to fall. And he also gives us a reason. He said the sins of the Amorites was not yet complete. So I have a plan, and he's revealing this plan that Abram didn't understand. He's asking for more information, so God's kind of filling in some blanks there. And it says, after the sun went down, it was dark, and then a smoking oven, as described, or a furnace and a burning torch passed between those animal sacrifices that Abram had placed. And then it says down in verse 18 that on the same day that the Lord made a covenant with Abram, and he says, to your descendants, I have given this land. So there's this emphatic statement. Again, he's building the confidence. You're wanting confidence. You're wanting me to tell you how this is going to happen. I'm telling you how it's going to happen. You need to be confident. I've given this land to your descendants. But it's going to be in God's time. Just a kind of physical description there. It says it's going to be about from the river of Egypt. It's not talking about the Nile. There's something called the river of Egypt that's kind of on the southern end of what we know as the land of Canaan, to the Euphrates. It describes, and then it describes all these peoples that are in the lands that, you know, pretty much that are going to be wiped out or moved out. Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, Jebusites. All this is listed here. And this just on this map just kind of shows you this is that when he said, I have given this land to your descendants. Just a reminder that's this is what they're going to be given. But again, it's going to be in God's time. And he just kind of described that timeline to them. I have given this land. Okay, any questions through chapter 15? Because that finishes it up. Or comments, sorry, not just questions, if you have a comment. Okay, let's get into chapter 16. See how I'm doing. All right, chapter 16, read a little bit of this, then we'll move through this. So this is the story of Hagar and Ishmael and kind of how that came about. First three verses here, Genesis 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abram, see now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So you've seen he's in his mid-80s by now when this is happening. Verses 4 through 6. So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, we're talking about Hagar here, her mistress became despised in her eyes. So Hagar here, we'll get back to this in a minute, but she, once she had sees that she is conceived, she looks at Sarah in a different way at this time right here. She, you know, whatever, there's maybe jealousy or whatever, all these things pour up to where she starts looking at Sarah maybe as not her, the one she's under authority of, but as a competition. Verse 5, then Sarah said to Abram, my wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me. So Abram said to Sarai, indeed your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. So this was Sarai's plan. You know, God had a plan that he's revealing to Abram. And Sarah comes up with her own plan. She's like, I'm barren. This didn't happen. I'm old. So she offers her handmaid to Abram to bring an heir. Abram complies. Hagar conceives, and then trouble begins to ensue. Sarah's despised by Hagar. She blames Abram for this, for allowing it to happen. And Abraham pretty much tells her, look, she's your maid. You know, handle your business as you see fit. And so she says, okay, and she deals very harshly. And because of that, Hagar flees from there. It says she goes towards Shur. So, you know, she's Egyptian. Did she start heading back? That's in the southern region, kind of leaving the land of Canaan and heading back towards Egypt, and she stops there. But in verse 6, you know, she kind of decided to head all the way back to where she came from. It kind of looks like it. And then an angel of the Lord appears to her, as described down around verse 8. Calls her Hagar, Sarai's maid, and he asks, where are you going? She said, I'm fleeing from Sarai. Angel says, return and submit to Sarai. That's what you need to do. So that's made me stop and pause on the thought right here. You know, sometimes we're in a relationship, it could be job or whatever, And there is a lesson here for us, I think, when we're under someone else's authority that we need to submit to that authority. And that's, you know, that's kind of what's being described here. They're saying what the right thing to do here is you're under her authority. You need to return to her. And so that's what's described there. And then getting down to around verse 10, some promises are made to her. She's told that God's going to multiply your descendants exceedingly, said in verse 10. Foretells of her future son, says, name the child Ishmael, which means God hears, specifically God's hearing your affliction here, as described in verse 11. Name him Ishmael, and says he's going to be a wild man down in verse 12, and he's going to be in constant strife, constant battle, constant trouble. When this occurs, it says in verse 16 that Abram is 86, or he's 86 when Ishmael is born. So thought question here is this the heir? So now Sarah had a plan and a son's going to be born named Ishmael. Is this the heir that Abram was promised to have? The answer is no. Again, God's in control. It's not Sarah's plan. It's not Abram's plan. It's God's plan. And this isn't the way he wants it done. Sarah decided to kind of go off another way. And God's saying, no, that's not the way it's going to be. All right. Any comments or questions on that story of Hagar and Ishmael? Okay. Let's continue on. Let's get into chapter 17. Says in the first four verses, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said to him, I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless, and I will make you, and I will make my covenant between me and you, and will multiply you exceedingly. Then Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. It says in verse 5, no longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be called Abraham. So that's how we're used to calling him. We get to start calling him Abraham finally again, and not worry about calling both names. But there's a reason for all this. But your name should be called Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come from you. So some of the facts out of that, Abraham's 99 years old. 13 years after Ishmael is born, still no heir as God sees it, has not happened yet. God will make a covenant. Abraham falls on his face. Talking with God is overwhelming. And that, you know, maybe that's obvious to us right there, but, you know, he sees this as just something that is just, you know, hard to put into words. So he falls on his face. It's described in verse 4 that he's the father of many nations. The name changed. Remember, he's going from a name that meant exalted father to now the father of a multitude, or as God just, as it was just written for us there, a father of many nations. Everlasting covenant down there in verses 7 and 8 on the nation and land promises. That everlasting word is used, an everlasting covenant between God, Abraham, and his descendants. And we wanted to bring up the point here, and this here is how the word everlasting is used at different places. My second point in there, I'll kind of say it first, is we got to look at the context that's about what's being said here. Is this everlasting covenant here about the land and the nation without end? Everlasting here seems to carry the meaning of a hidden amount of time or an indefinite period of time, not eternal without end, because we know Bible history, first of all, and what happened right here and what God kept telling the people, that you have to walk with me. This was a conditional covenant. And as we know, as we get into later times and discussing what's going to eventually lead to captivity, and there that the people turn their back on God and they break the covenant. So and here the word is not that it's not ever going away, but it's an indefinite period of time that we know through our studies of the Old Testament actually what happens in the story. And they're going to lose their land, and their nation's going to be split apart and torn and intermarried and moved all over the place, all because of why? Because they turn their backs on God, because they don't hold up to their end of the bargain, they decide not to obey God is what happens there. All right, any comments or questions on up through those verses? Okay. So God says, I will be your God. Talking about Abraham and his descendants down in verses 7 through 8. And I give to you the land. Again, he's repeated these promises over and over. You know, but a lot of time has passed too here. We've had, you know, over a decade described in just what we've been going over the last couple of chapters here. And God has continued to build Abram's faith and let him know that I'm with you and this is going to happen. But he says, you and your descendants shall keep my covenant through your generations. In verse 9, there'll be a sign of the covenant to be kept. It's going to be something called circumcision. Every male born in your house, 8 days old, or one bought with money, as described in verses 10 through 14, all of these males shall be circumcised, and that's going to be the sign of the covenant. And it says, if they refuse, of course, the eight-year-old's not going to refuse, right? But, you know, if the family refuses to have their boy circumcised as described by God there, they're going to be cut off. And Mr. Waldron seems to think that means death, could mean cast away, whatever, but they're out of it. That's a breaking of the covenant and it's via rebellion. If they're not going to do this, they will not be part of these promises, and it may actually be that they were put to death for this out of their rebellion. Okay, Sarah's not barren is going to be the next section here. So God's plan is coming to fruition here. It says in verse 15 of chapter 17 that her name is being changed to Sarah from Sarai, which means princess. She's no longer barren. She would be the mother of nations, and kings would be born from her. Just like was said about Abraham being the father of nations, she's going to be the mother of nations. Just he's going to be the father of kings. She's going to be the mother of kings. Says here that Abraham laughed. He was overjoyed. Again, we have to look at context. We'll see more about Sarah later in a similar situation where it talked about her laughing, but here it says Abraham laughed at the promise of a child. Not mocking God seems to be, as described here, as just overjoyed. You know, he's been hearing these promises over and over, and is it going to be somebody that's not even born from my house? Is it going to be Ishmael? As we see here, he still wants it to be that way, but you know, all this is kind of going around in Abram's head here, but he laughed. He's totally overjoyed about this. Abraham is 99, almost 100 years old, as described in verses 17 and 24. And so that makes Sarah about 90 years old, says in verse 17. So in verse 18, Abraham petitions for Ishmael to be the heir. That's what he asked God for. You know, he's wanting it to be Ishmael. And God answers no. And I think I'll probably end on maybe this slide right here. But God says, no, that's not my plan. You know, that may be your plan. You want it to be Ishmael. I've had a plan all along, and you need to trust me. It's not going to be Ishmael. Sarah will bear you a son, it says in verse 19. And his name will be Isaac, which means laughter. The covenant will be given to him and his descendants, it says in verses 19 and 21. He'll be, Ishmael will be blessed, however. He's going to be a great nation. I was telling him, you don't need to worry about Ishmael here, but he's not your heir to the promises that I've been telling you. But Ishmael will be blessed, but will not be the son of promise. By this time next year, he's told that Isaac will be born, and that's getting down to verse 21. Then Abraham circumcises all males in his household. This goes with his obedience again. Total obedience to God. God says, this is what I want done. And Abraham jumps on it and circumcises all the males in his household that same day as described in verses 23 through 26. So at this point, Abraham is 99 and Ishmael is 13. So we'll kind of leave for the next time. We'll do a little bit of review, including the lessons that came out of these three chapters right here. And then, so we'll finish that up. And then Wednesday, we'll also get into chapters 18 and 19, which is going to get into these issues that we talked about that were coming for Lot, the consequences of Lot choosing the place that he chose to be in. We're going to finally see all of those consequences come into bear. Thanks for your attention.